Members, we're going to get started here in just a moment. We are televised today, so please be aware that if your cell phone is on, you may have the, whoever does the televising may come up and talk to us. So be sure to turn it off if you can. We're going to get started. I can't call it to order because we don't quite have a quorum just yet. I'm sure it's going to be coming. So I believe in front of the committee today we have Brenda Norman, and she's the Executive Director of the Governor's Workforce Development Council. We will do the minutes and call it to order as people show up. And I may interrupt you about 10 or 15 minutes. I'll give everybody time to get here. Ms. Norman, thank you for coming to the committee today. Could you please identify yourself for the record and proceed?
Good morning, Chair Mahoney and members of the committee. My name is Brenda Norman, and I am the Executive Director of the Governor's Workforce Development Council. What we are here to talk about today is two reports that the Governor's Workforce Development Council has put together through the work of their committees over the last year and a half. And first, I'd just like to tell you a little bit about the Governor's Workforce Development Council. Our mission is to analyze and recommend workforce development policies to the Governor and the legislature that focus on talent development, resource alignment, and system effectiveness to enhance the capacity of our workforce and our economy. Also, in your packets today, there is a list of the council members, a roster of our council members. It's a bipartisan council with members that are represented by business, labor, education, local elected officials, community-based organizations, state agency leadership, as well as legislators. The first report that I'm going to be talking about today is focused on the Minnesota Workforce Center's resource area. It is the packet that looks like this in your folders, and it addresses a study that the Systems Excellence Committee of the Governor's Workforce Development Council conducted. In the last half of 2008. Just for a little bit of background information, the resource areas are a designated space in each of Minnesota's 47 workforce centers that provide self-service job search, which is access to computers, job listings, labor market information, resume development, job search workshops, phones, faxes, and support program information for individuals who are unemployed or who are looking to change jobs. The universal customers that we studied are identified as any individual who's visiting a workforce center and would like to access these services, which are called core services. It's not based on eligibility, program participation. It's for any individual who comes in and wants to access these services. The committee came up with a key question, which is, what are the outcomes of the universal customers who are using the core services, as well as additional questions that they would like, that they wanted to have answered through this study? Who are these universal customers? What are the reasons that they come in and use the resource areas? What are the results of the experience of accessing these services? How did this experience, the tools, meet with their expectations? And how could this have been enhanced for them? In order to collect this information, the study design included a client survey that was conducted by telephone with representative sample of clients with a 95% confidence level. The Minnesota DEED customer registration system data, the customer satisfaction survey information, which is collected monthly, a set of focus groups, interviews, as well as a literature review. Just a little bit of data. In 2008, overall, nearly 100,000 Universal customers were served in Minnesota. This is an unduplicated count. It does not count multiple visits. Using computers for job search, resume development, a job application process, etc., 96,611, and customers who are attending workshops, which are on creative job search, resume development, was over 10,000. Now, the information specifically in detail that includes information on the customer demographics, on the education level, et cetera, is in the report. And because we are providing an overview this morning on the executive summary, I'm not going to take you through all of the detail because it's quite extensive. It is available in the report. But there are...
Ms. Norman, we actually sent it out, and I know the committee members, most all of them read it, so they're looking forward to the overview, so then they have some questions for you.
Thank you. So what I want to present are major findings in terms of two areas, critical issues regarding clients that are coming into the resource areas and the issues that they bring with them. For one thing, as we know, in Minnesota overall, we are experiencing an increasing level of diversity. But diversity doesn't just mean ethnic and racial backgrounds. Diversity means more individuals with disabilities. Certainly as we age, we all acquire a sort of disability or another, as well as we have individuals who are ex-offenders, need special services or special focus and attention. We have clients that are coming in with a myriad of concerns and issues beyond unemployment. We have individuals who are dealing with health, health care, transportation, housing, mortgage, financial, child care, a myriad of issues that can impede the job search process. And the staff who are working with clients are often on the front line to help them sort through some of these issues, get them referred to special services before they can actually attend to the job search issue. The other element that complicates this is that our society runs on technology, whether it is developing a resume, which requires word processing, job applications are also often required to be submitted online or to attach a resume to the application to the company. Everything is job search is done on online, so everything is based on computer skills, on the ability to word process and understand how to use a computer. And where we're finding a significant issue is that there is a general lack of computer skills, particularly among some immigrant populations, as well as individuals who have been in jobs for a significant period of time and have not been required to use technology. So there's a big gap between what's required of an individual even to look for work and their ability to do so. The other critical issues are in terms of the current capacity to provide services. The court services are funded through a federal funding program called Wagner-Peiser, which funding has remained flat for the past 20 years. In Minnesota, the staff at one time was 437 individuals, which has been reduced now to approximately 143. In 2004, because of the great emphasis on services to businesses, 35 of those staff were redesignated as business service specialists, and their function is to go out and provide information and services to businesses, which then has reduced the number of individuals in the resource areas providing core services. And what has happened is that the local areas have stepped in to fill the gaps on providing service, and the partnerships that they build, they have partnerships with the Minnesota Family Investment Program staff or the Veteran Services staff or the Rehab Services staff, who are partners in the workforce centers, but they essentially pack together a schedule of services. Many local workforce areas indeed have no job service staff at all. As well as the sheer volume of participants coming in for assistance in filing unemployment insurance claims and to look for jobs, to begin job search, the increased demand just simply is becoming overwhelming. The major finding that we found in this study is that the self-service model on which the federal mandates indicated should be designed for one-stop centers really does not meet the need of the individuals who are coming in for assistance, either to file unemployment insurance claims or for assistance in the job search process. Essentially, the people who have the technology skills and the ability to search for jobs on their own don't need to come into a resource area. They can access a computer either at home, or they can go to a public library or wherever there's a public computer and take care of those processes by themselves. But the people who come in really need assistance. And at this time, what we're finding is that the staff is so overwhelmed that they can often spend just barely a few minutes getting an individual set up on a computer and not having enough time to actually provide them with the sort of help that they need.
Ms. Norman, if I might interrupt you, we're joined today. I wanted to introduce a high school group that joined us today to kind of find out how we work so well together. And they're the 12th grade students from Princeton High School. And we appreciate you coming, and we hope we leave an indelible mark on you. And seeing how I have interrupted our witness, I thought maybe I would call us to order. And wait a second, they tell me I don't do this loud enough. So we are now, as a committee, in order, and I'm going to... I know President Gotwell has been doing, has been reading the minutes feverishly in between this testimony. So would you be so kind as to move the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I'll move approval of the minutes.
Thank you. Any additions or subtractions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Minutes have passed. Did you have a question, or do you want to? Okay. Do you have much longer to your presentation, or would you care to take a question right now?
I'm open to questions, certainly.
Representative Norton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it really is on this slide that you're just talking about the self-service model. And I've been talking to the folks at the unemployment insurance office about the quality of applications that they get, and one of the concerns is that people don't fill out the form properly or thoroughly enough, or perhaps lack the skills necessary educationally to even fill out the form properly, and so therefore they're denied their claims, forcing us into adjudication down the line. And so I'm a little concerned that if you're feeling the self-service model isn't working, maybe it's because people aren't utilizing it, rather than that it's not helpful to those that might benefit. So I'm just wondering if you can comment on that, or if you prefer not to, that's okay too. I just...
Ms. Norman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. You are correct, and I believe that for the individuals who are able to navigate, there isn't an issue. But there are two concerns for an individual who isn't able to navigate the system on their own, whether it's a language barrier or whether it's a literacy barrier, for whatever reason that they are not able to complete an application properly indicates that they do need staff assistance for that immediate need. And then, of course, we always have the partnership with Adult Basic Education to provide the longer-term literacy skill development so that they can acquire those skills. But that is a longer-term process.
Members, we're getting a lot of feedback, so you might want to check your cell phones to make sure. That's from the microphone? Well, I'll sit back then. Maybe that'll help.
I think it's a cell phone.
Anyhow, Ms. Norman, and I'm going to step in here and just so Representative Norton understands that I was looking at the governor's budget yesterday, and just to help this along, he decided in his budget to take money from the workforce fund to transfer over to the UI, basically to help the unemployment insurance people because of those 35 members that are out doing the business scales, about $6 million. I certainly hope he rethinks that because workforce development is for training versus unemployment. The unemployment is a different issue. But I think Representative Gottlow, you had a question?
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. I think what I may do is wait until the end of the presentation and then ask the question if I could. Thank you.
Okay, that ends it. Keith, could you resume?
Thank you. I want to take you to the two recommendations that are most applicable for discussion in this committee. One is that the DWDC does support the addition to and reallocation of existing state staff to meet those increased demands. And I would like to say that the Governor's Workforce Development Council does not have a preference for whether these individuals are hired through the state or whether they're hired at the local level. And the second recommendation is that the GWDC supports the addition of temporary staff to help meeting the needs, the increased demands for assistance in filing unemployment insurance. And I would just like to point out that, as I said, the remaining recommendations in the report are specific actions that can be accomplished at the agency level regarding the accountability items system-wide and local service delivery strategies. And that is the conclusion on this particular report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, I noticed that under education recommendation, we've got one about producing these plans at ninth grade and even making it a graduation standard. And a couple words in the recommendation as it's presented here caused me a little concern. Reviewing and guiding suggests to me that we're trying to tell these kids what they're going to do and what they're going to be good at a very early age. I think it's great to encourage them, to urge them to have a plan, and to invite them and show the opportunities that might be open to them based on their early aptitudes. But, it becomes a graduation requirement by 2014. This is one of the knocks on the European system of education, is that they put people in slots for career paths very early, and there's not as much opportunity for people to be flexible. Maybe you could respond to that.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney and Representative Gottlow. The information in that particular recommendation was not intended to indicate that any sort of involuntary tracking, so to speak, would occur. The GWDC Education Committee studied this topic thoroughly and extensively and reviewed many, many school districts around the state that are providing the opportunity for students to graduate with a career plan and the accompanying education plan that's required in order to achieve that. We know that high school students make choices that are sometimes informed and sometimes uninformed. But we prefer that they make informed choices, and we believe that exposure to the multiple opportunities of careers and occupations and jobs, exposure early on through a multitude of experiences, internships, mentorships, etc., only benefits them and helps them make a better informed choice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know, for example, I've personally been involved with Junior Achievement, which accomplishes that in the private sector to a certain extent, and would love to hear some people talk about how that's helping impact workforce development around the state at some point. But again, I get awfully concerned when we're talking about mandating things on ninth graders and graduates in high school, when in fact a lot of kids, by the time they're sophomores in college, haven't really decided yet. And you know, the fact that we might require them to start building a career path too early or too arbitrarily is a bit of a concern. There's concern around the state about how much we're asking our kids to do at a very young age. And I know we're walking a fine line. We want to find people who have certain aptitudes and get them into the science and math and the things we need for our emerging technologies and emerging economies. But I would tread very carefully here.
And Ms. Norman and the seniors from Princeton, just so you know, in the give and take, I totally disagree. I think that our students coming out of high school should have an idea of the breadth of options that are open to them, not to be slotted, but, you know, is it fun to be a construction worker, or is it just hard work? Is it a rock star scientist of tomorrow, or do I want to be an accountant? Or, you know, or what do they call those guys with the insurance companies? Actuarians, as our good colleague Mr. David likes to talk about. Representative Winkley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This actually has, I think, touched sort of a bipartisan nerve in a sense, because seniors, I agree completely with my Republican colleague on the other side of the table here. And I think actually the challenge is that people who might be helping guide these students in presenting plans won't actually know the whole range of options that might be available to them, and in fact might be unnecessarily limiting the not just creativity but the scope of what kids might think that they can do. And I think it's not exposing kids to more opportunities. It's not saying you need to have a great arts curriculum or a great science curriculum in order to give them opportunity to do things that they otherwise might not have, to explore different ideas. It's more about channeling, in a sense, by saying you have to have a plan. I think the idea of a plan to something other than a good quality high school education and a diploma is not a very good direction to go in. I guess maybe we had some bad experience in our past, Steve, that made us not think that. I can tell you my bad experience in this.
No, I don't think we need to get into personal stories here. We have some other questions, but go ahead, if you'd like to respond, Ms. Norman.
Thank you. I would just like to point out one caveat about understanding the importance of a clear set of information. We know that there are certain careers in science, technology, engineering, and math that if students do not take the appropriate courses starting in eighth grade, they have essentially cut themselves out of that pathway at a very early age. And so we really encourage, again, as I said, informed choices.
It's Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney and Ms. Norman. I just wanted to kind of end on this conversation, too. I saw that, and that stuck out in my mind immediately. And I, too, have very grave concerns about it. So I think one of the things I'm more interested in is exactly what a plan means, because I think the devil is in the detail here. Information is one thing. I want my kids exposed to all the information. I didn't get the information that I sought in high school as to what, I didn't even know what some of the careers that existed were. So I think it's great to have that information. I am very concerned about a plan because it's been my experience with both me I have a lot of extended family members, nieces and nephews, that I don't believe that someone in ninth grade can make choices long term in their career. I just don't think they have the confidence and the maturity to know what they can achieve. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more specifically about what that means. Have a plan reviewed at least annually. Does that mean, well, maybe you could just explain to me, does that mean they have to commit to whether they're going to college, to what career they plan on doing, or is it something less than that?
Ms. Newman, is before you answer that, is that part of the next report that you were going over?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Would you care to repeat that question after she's gone through the report a little bit, or do you want an answer right now? If you could briefly go through that next report, and then we'll go right back to Representative Pepin.
Thank you. As I said, the first report was talking about this immediate need in the workforce centers. The Governor's Workforce Development Council also puts out a policy advisory every other year, and it's based on the work of the committees that are established through topic areas of importance and interest to the council members. The policy advisory of 2008 that came out this past summer identified the critical needs that are more long-term for the state. And that, of course, we know that Minnesota's employers need skilled workers to prosper in the global economy, but we also know that there is a significant number of people in a multitude all across the industries that are near eligibility age or are eligible to retire in the next 3 to 5 years. And as we come out of the current economic conditions that we are in, we know that there will be a critical skill shortage. We also know that in 2009 is the peak number of high school graduates that we will see in Minnesota and indeed across the nation for the next 20 years. That population will be declining. The categories of these recommendations fall into the education arena, the skill and wage advancement, which focuses on advancing low-wage workers into career pathways, and the business and community connections, which talks about the employer-driven, demand-driven education and training, and the diversity committee. Here is the education recommendation that has caused discussion. I would like to, if I may, call a lifeline. I was not a direct participant in this committee as they put this recommendation together. But if possible, I would like to call our council member, Mo Amundsen, who was the chair of this committee and is in the audience today. May I invite her up?
Please do.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Could you please state your name for the record?
Mo Amundsen from Rochester, Minnesota.
Please proceed.
Our recommendation came because we know personally on our committee, and I had a huge committee, I think there were 48 people on this committee from all walks, from various areas, and people even from the juvenile justice system. So we had a real rich discussion about this. What our vision was is that students starting in ninth grade at least think about something that they might want to do and start exploring, not pigeonholing them, not putting them in a trap, anything like that. We want kids to start thinking about STEM. We want kids to start thinking about the health field, where there's good jobs, and we want them to start thinking about it at an early age, not wait until they're already wasted 2 years in college and spend a lot of money and then decide at that point, oh gosh, maybe I want to be a social worker. But I didn't take any of the things that I wanted, I should have taken. Or I want to be an engineer, but gosh, I never even took computer-aided drafting in high school. We want them to start thinking about it, changing it annually. Some kids might want to think they want to be a hairstylist in ninth grade, and that's a great thing to look at. Find out about that career and see if that's the pathway you want to go in. The next year, you might want to be a nurse. And that's what our hope is, at least look at these things and have some idea what type of education you're going to need to get there. And look at it early and look at it often. So that's why we really focused on this, is because we think the kids need to think about the rest of their lives at an early age. I have a little grandson who wants to draw things on the computer. Well, I'm taking him to a drafting class at our local college so he can see that he can draw things on a computer. He's 9 years old, but I want him to see what that is. So that's our focus behind this, and we think it's important, and it's not a waste of resources. It's an option to look at a lot of different careers, and we all know that by the time kindergarten students graduate from high school, 70% of those careers are not even thought yet. So that's why we want them to look at it when they're starting in ninth grade, so that they can make good informed decisions by the time they get into college.
Representative Pepin, did that answer your question, or did this just add to it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that added to my question. Ms. Amundson, the question I'm specifically looking at is, I'm very confused by the word plan. It's a kind of nefarious word, and I'm wondering, what are you having in mind exactly for the graduation requirement? Are you envisioning some kind of a report they put together? Are you envisioning saying, I think I'm going to be a hairdresser? What exactly are, since it's going to be a graduation requirement, I'm just wondering what the committee had envisioned for a very specific plan that would be looking for. Is it going to, you know what I'm saying, is it going to be a report? Is it going to be stopping in by the guidance counselor and saying, well, I'm thinking about doing X? I'm just really curious, because I really think that that's where the crux of this is going to be, the argument is going to be, and what exactly a plan means, because I think there's a really big difference between getting information and sort of, in my mind, getting kids on the thought that they've picked this and they've got to continue doing this. And I'm really concerned about what the plan is. So if you could just talk about what you had envisioned exactly, that would be very helpful.
Ms. Olmsen, I think that's page 12 of your summary, but go right ahead.
Well, some of the things that we looked at, and we looked at various what we call guidance systems. We looked at Naviance, we looked at Achieve, we looked at all kinds of different options that districts around the state are using. And what we envision by a plan is a technology tool that can be changed and parents can look at, and input from counselors, input from teachers. The students can kind of say, well, I'm thinking about this right now, but it's more of a technology tool that can be used to develop a resume, develop a plan over the years. Develop their own personal plan.
Learning journey.
Learning journey was another.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
I'll use it. Brynert? Did I get it right at all?
You're getting closer. Brynert. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment that...
I just want you to know that Joanna is actually phonically spelling it, and I'm still getting it wrong.
You may need a little remedial help, since you didn't didn't have a plan when you were in ninth grade.
Actually, they did at my high school.
Sorry. My comment is just, in Mankato Area Public Schools, we've been doing this sort of thing for about 15 years. We have an active partnership with the Chamber of Commerce, and we have a career education plan in place, and it actually goes K-12, and it does involve junior achievement at the middle school level. We bring in private sector volunteers, and the idea is a combination of exposure and capitalizing on interest and skill level, so that for some students very specific choices in high school are probably essential to their employment leaving high school. They may have no additional post-secondary plans. In a number of our schools often haven't provided well for those students. On the other extreme are students who are interested in very advanced math and science kinds of careers, and we haven't often caught those students early enough, as has been pointed out. So I think the plan, while fluid, is meant to capitalize on the interests and skills of students and help them see what's available. So I don't think it's about pigeonholing at all. At least that's not what I've seen in our district.
And in the same fashion, I have a little personal. My daughter came out of her high school, who's the counselor, is a fellow member of ours at this body. It kind of helped her work through that quite a bit on a more personal level rather than a systematic one. So, and you know, it's a little scary to see someone that focused, but Representative Poppy, I think you had the next question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Amundson, good to see you again. I met you last year in Rochester, and I would just say, as a college career counselor, I would appreciate that we bring students along. Ninth grade, to me, is almost too late to be thinking about where they want to be going. I think it's then they're planning for what they're going to be, and they maybe hadn't even prepped enough in junior high to be able to get into the classes they need by ninth grade. And I also would support this, as it sounds as though it may mean that we would actually have counselors in a high school setting, and that is something that in Minnesota we really lack, having good career guidance and counseling that helps students along. And just on another note, this is a fiscally responsible thing because as I work with students who are coming into the college at this point, when we have 60% of students who are needing to take remedial work in order to be able to be prepared to do college-level English and math, that costs taxpayers a whole heck of a lot of money. And I'd really like to see us helping our students be prepared, know what the rigor is that's going to be expected of them if they decide to go into engineering or business or cosmetology or whatever, so that they understand what the future does hold and hopefully can be better prepared for that.
Representative Fulton.
I teach eighth grade, and we do in Minneapolis, and we do the Explore test early in the year, and it gives a generic field to look at for kids, and then a multitude of different jobs that we talk about. We don't have counselors, so it's the homeroom teacher who works with the kids. It helps them to plan their high school program. It helps them to select classes. I find it very useful and almost kind of fun to do. Middle-class kids, upper-middle-class kids, they've got people who at home who can say, you know, be a doctor, be a lawyer, be whatever. The world is your oyster. But I teach primarily multi-generational poverty, kids from poverty, and they're all going to be pro ball players or they're going to do braids, hair. And what this test does is it kind of opens the door so I can say, well, let's go with a plan B, just in case you don't play pro ball or you aren't going to do hair forever. It gets a little boring, let's say. I think for kids that don't have someone in their corner explaining the options to them, it's very, very beneficial to look at a generic field and then tons of options within that field, just to look at high school planning for the kids.
Got one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I don't think anybody's questioning. In fact, I think we're all on the same page on a lot of these things. I mean, my son, I've got five kids. Two of them have almost gone through high school completely. The other one's about to enter. And they've all had exposure to career opportunities. You seem to be pretty good in math. Think about it. Here are some things you might want to think about if you want a career in science or math. And those kinds of invitations, encouragements, exposure are great. And already, as you pointed out, many of our high schools are doing those with or without counselors. But I think my only point was to be a little cautious about this. When you start insisting on somebody putting together a plan at this age and then requiring it as a graduation standard, there can be the tendency to have limited exposure and putting somebody on a track that may or may not be right for them, especially at a young age. I mean, the whole idea behind a liberal arts education and the idea of giving people a well-rounded basis in high school and early college is that these people change careers multiple times. As I forget who it was pointed out, a lot of the technologies and jobs that these people are going to be doing don't even exist yet. So the skills they need are the basic building blocks, and then they need to learn how to learn, how to assimilate information and apply it. And they're going to do that in creative and different ways. I started out junior in high school. I got a radio show, and I loved radio. But it took me into professional communications eventually, and that was through college counseling and other things. But it took a while for that to evolve. And I think that's true of a lot of young people. And what I get concerned about, and it's a legitimate concern, I think, because we have, in the European model, these plans taken to the ultimate extent. You're identified very early with a skill set, and that's what you're going to be. And that's the track you're put on for the rest of your life. I'm not saying that's what you're trying to do, but we need to be careful about this. There may be kids who put together a plan and really don't know what they want to do by the time they graduate. If we make it a graduation requirement or standard, are we going to hold them back or not graduate them because they haven't put together their game plan? That's what I'm wanting us to be careful about.
Members, we have the Workforce Investment Board here too, and I'm going to hopefully about 10 more minutes. Representative Winkler, you had a question? Or you were just doing hand signals?
I was just making gestures, Mr. Chair.
I'm just wondering, is there any kind of plan that would lead you to be like a state legislator so we could really amend that plan? I was trying to be nice and tactful, but...
Sure, I'd love to come up here and join you.
thank you. Ms. Norman, did you have some to finish, or are you done?
I have just a couple of more recommendations that I can walk you through, and I will conclude.
That'd be great.
Thank
Please.
You. The next recommendation is to update Minnesota's financial assistance policies to better support adult and non-traditional learners. Right now, the Minnesota State Grants Program, the primary need-based student aid program, the grants are available to less than half-time students, but to be eligible for a loan through the Minnesota Student Educational Loan Fund, the students must be enrolled at least half-time. And if you are an individual who has a family and a full-time job, and you're attempting to go to school to increase your skills or obtain a certificate or a degree, further education, being enrolled half-time is a very significant challenge. And so this limits the financial aid availability for individuals who are enrolled less than half-time. And also, there's another element that the Minnesota State Grant is restricted to students that are specifically in formal degree, diploma, and certificate programs at least 8 weeks long and involve 12 credits. There are a lot of industry-based training, technical skills, courses, et cetera, that do not qualify under this current restriction, and that is what this recommendation addresses. The next recommendation discusses this pathway of stackable credentials, whether it's an industry-based credential, whether it is a certificate that comes out of adult, you know, can stack on top of a GED, a pre-college course, and then that stacks upon itself into that forms this educational and career currency, if you will. That's recognized by employers and job seekers as a credential. This one relates to the cost reimbursement formula for post-secondary institutions. We know that
providing courses in nursing, in technology, in manufacturing, and engineering all cost a lot more to host in an institution than does an art history course or an English course. The formula for providing these courses is the same to a post-secondary institution. We have seen these courses diminish in our secondary schools because of the cost, and we are now at a significant pattern in our post-secondary institutions. The rate of reimbursement is the same, and the cost is much more significant. And these kinds of courses lead to careers that are in high demand. The last recommendation is from our Diversity Action Committee. Diversity, again, I would like to point out, encompasses a much broader realm than individuals of different racial or ethnic backgrounds. It involves people with disabilities. It involves age. It involves gender, et cetera. So it's a very broad-based group. However, the recommendation is that is to expand the opportunity for workplace experience for all individuals through internships, mentorships, job shadowing, etc., to build that work experience, to build that relationship between an individual and an employer, and to provide learning in a context that is relevant and meaningful and adds to their job portfolio. And that is the end of this presentation. Thank you.
No one has any questions here, but I really have a couple of questions myself. So these are all recommendations. What weight do they carry with the workforce areas and with the governor? I mean, are they implemented by the governor? Who has the authority to say, do these?
Primarily, they occur at three different arenas. One level can be agency to agency, where because we have Department of Human Services, Department of Education, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and Department of Human Services, Department of Employment and Economic Development, all represented on the council.
Do you need any departments out there?
Oh, there's a lot more. before these recommendations can be published, they need to be supported by the executive committee and the full council. So there are some instances where agency to agency actions can be taken. As we saw in the governor's budget, there was that reflects on our recommendation to increase assistance to the workforce centers, resource areas, job seekers, and unemployment insurance applicants, as well as the legislature. So those are the three arenas where actions can be taken.
And no other questions. I'll get one more here. You know, I've been a huge advocate of a plan, some kind of a plan, an overarching plan, statewide plan. Could this be used as kind of a, or could your agency come up with an overarching plan or a large region plan? I believe we have 16 or 19 workforce areas in the state. Bring them together to say, you know, boy, we've got, if you go up to the north, you've got farming, timber, and mineral extraction. How are all three or four of you working in southern Minnesota? I suspect some of that is working out itself in southern Minnesota. Could your agency or could your council be the avenue to kind of bring those people together? And
Chairman Honey, yes, it could. And in fact, we do work very closely with the Minnesota Workforce Council Association. And the role of the DWBC is to provide strategic direction to the workforce programs and providers. And we're very interested in providing that leadership.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was interested in your the section, and it probably goes a little more to the Higher Ed Committee rather than this one, but I'm going to take the opportunity. You talked about the need for grants and opportunities for adult learners. And I do know that because I believe this body passed some legislation on prior learning assessments, which you don't mention specifically, but is implied, I think, in there a little bit. And working with MNSCU, it was specific to veterans, but is that MNSCU has broadened that beyond veterans. But I do find there's a, as I try talking about this particular issue with the University of Minnesota, it's a little tougher to make inroads there than the MNSCU system. At least that's been my observation. I do have an interest in this area because I do believe with the changing demographics and the lack of workforce coming in the future, we are going to need to do something to re-educate, finish educating our adult learners. And I do have a LILA account, which I don't know if it will come before this committee, but will work its way through the process this year. But I guess on this other, do you have any other bills or suggestions, or are you working with someone to bring other ideas forward beyond just the report here? Because as I looked at it, I couldn't find something really specific that one could wrap up in a bill quickly to carry forward. So,
thank you, Chair Mahoney and Representative. We will reconnect again with the Office of Higher Education, with whom we worked on drafting this recommendation, and I know that at that time that we were working on this recommendation, they were completing the work from and developing the recommendations from a significant study and advisory council group they had brought together. So we will reconnect with them.
Mr. Over, Representative Over Mueller.
Thank you, Chair. There were some discussions earlier today about the 35 people who were redirected out to work, going out to businesses and generating information from them to take back into the workforce development centers. With the governor's proposal to take $6 million out of the workforce development fund to create basically new people to go out and help these employees transition through the process of being unemployed and back into work, wouldn't it be better to use these people who have been out already, these 35 people, or some portion of them, to be working with these people? I mean, that's the group they came from before. They're already trained. They're ready to do that work.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney and Representative. I believe that that actually was the language in the recommendation to, excuse me if I could find it, add to staff and reallocate existing staff that does reflect that.
And follow up, please.
Go right ahead.
The new staff that you're looking for, you're saying that we have so much work that there's so much unmet need now that the 35 members pulling them all back would not be enough. We'd still need more on top of that to meet the needs that we've got coming up over the next few years.
Chair Mahoney and Representative, I would actually like to defer that question to both the Workforce Council Association and to DEED staff as they directly work with the programs on managing and administering those programs, and they have probably even more current information on the need and demand in specific areas.
Well, I guess that'll be a question we'll get them up here at the Workforce Investment Board, which I think is our next group. Ms. Norman, thank you very much. And you members know how to get a hold of Ms. Norman, and some interesting recommendations in there. Some I really appreciate.
Thank you.
Our next group is the presentation of the Workforce Investment Board. Kathy, I think it's White. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
My name is Kathy White, and I am the chair of the Dakota Scott Workforce Investment Board and the chair of the Minnesota Workforce Council Association.
Please proceed.
Okay. Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I already shared my name with you. Professionally, or what I do for my day job, is I work for Stratus Health, where I'm the Senior Vice President of Administration. Stratus Health is located in Bloomington, but provides services throughout the state. I appreciate the opportunity you've provided to me to talk about the workforce, or the role that workforce councils play across the state in the delivery of our publicly funded employment and training programs. One of the biggest challenges I face as a chair is describing how the local workforce councils fit into the overall workforce development system. I'd like to provide briefly some background information before I talk about the important work being done by the 16 councils across the state. As you know, Minnesota currently has 47 workforce centers. Each is made up of a partnership of several employment and training programs, co-located in one building in an effort to reduce fragmentation and duplication of services. The creation of the workforce centers began in 1993 when a meeting was called for federal, state, and local service providers to define the one-step concept focused on providing information and resources that enable individuals to achieve economic security and provide employers with the prepared workers they need to successfully compete. Currently, workforce centers include the following mandatory partners: Job Service, State Services for the Blind, Veteran Services, Rehabilitation Services, and Local Workforce Service Area Partners. Local partners, for whom the MWCA advocates, receive state and federal funds to administer dislocated worker, adults, youth, and MCIV employment and training programs. The workforce centers are organized into 16 workforce service areas, or you may hear them referred to as WSAs. The governance, delivery infrastructure, and financial responsibilities of the WSAs are under the direction of the local elected officials. The local elected officials appoint members to the workforce council, which is the focal point for leadership and accountability. These local councils include represented community business leaders, labor unions, educational institutions, economic development agencies, and other community-based organizations. The chair of each council and a majority of the members represent the private sector as mandated by law. Workforce councils provide the strategic direction for meeting workforce development goals as outlined in state and federal statute. The members act as leaders in their communities to make connections among the multiple stakeholders and leverage resources to bolster the overall effectiveness of the system. By way of example around strategic planning, the Dakota Scott Workforce Investment Board has several activities, such as we have an entrepreneurship training program, we have programs in financial literacy, we've done some short-term training in bank skills, and of course we have incumbent worker training. We also were a key player in a recent event which we called the Tri-WIB event, where we brought together, coming together was the WIBs of Ramsey County, Washington County, and Dakota Scott County. We met last June, shared information about our demographics, about the issues that were pertinent to our area, and then as the membership, we got together and discussed strategies and ways to go move forward a plan that would actually help our three areas together. And next month, we'll actually be having the first meeting of representatives from each of those three WIBs who will begin discussing. So it's a great example of how we actually took different workforce service areas, different WIBs, and began to work together to meet a need we felt we had. I think it's very important to note that the Minnesota Workforce Councils work well together, as just explained, and often, across geographic boundaries to address the needs of regional economies in an efficient, effective, and timely manner. And there are many examples of these partnerships. For instance, I participate in regular meetings of the Greater Metropolitan Workforce Board. This is made up of workforce service areas that service the Twin City areas.
Currently, some of the work of that board entails working on employer collaboration in manufacturing, healthcare, information technology, and educational disparities. Our partnerships even span state lines. In Northeast and Southeast Minnesota, my counterparts work closely with workforce leaders in Wisconsin and Iowa. And in Western Minnesota, they are in regular contact with North and South Dakota. In another display of collaboration, Minnesota is one of the few states which the local workforce entities have formed a statewide organization, the Minnesota Workforce Council Association, MWCA. Our association has full staff, and what it does is it provides a forum for all of us to come together to collectively discuss issues, best practices, strategies, and identify priorities for the use of public employment and training dollars, and to advocate for a locally driven workforce system. At this time of this economic downturn, I want to assure you that we are doing all we can to utilize resources and leverage partnerships to serve the thousands of job seekers relying on the services provided in the workforce centers. And as stewards of programs funded by employer-supported workforce development funds, we realize businesses also want to see concrete results. We appreciate the recommendations made by the Governor's Workforce Development Council, which advocate for a strong investment in workforce services and certainly provide food for thought as to how we can improve our collective work. While we work very closely with the GWDC and our partners at the Department of Employment and Economic Development, what I really want to stress, and I can't stress enough, is the importance of having local leaders who care about the economic vitality of their areas and their employees and their businesses serving on the Workforce Council, and the crucial direction they provide in determining how best to invest in our workers and our economy. As you move forward and as your work as a policy committee, I hope you know and call on us on a regular basis for information we could share and input that we see on a daily basis. Again, thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. And we had a chance to meet a few weeks back at the end of the year dinner, or I guess breakfast, I should say, that you put on recognizing the good work that you're doing down there. I'm from Eagan, and I'm proud of the work that Dakota County and Scott County are doing working together down there. But I'm concerned about making sure we're putting the money that we're using for these programs to the right purpose. All of us talked about it a lot over the last few years about setting priorities here. So when we think about, you probably heard my question to the earlier presenter, of course, and when you think about where we're going to prioritize money that was meant, the $6 million that was going to go to, I think, retraining people, as to whether that should be used to hiring new folks to do jobs that we have people, 35 of them, out doing something different than what they were originally hired to do. In the day-to-day operations that you're seeing at the Workforce Center in Dakota County, would we be better off pulling back those 35 people to do that job? Do we need more people on top of that? What should we be doing there?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think we really do need more people doing that job. We've had and seen a 17% increase in visits to the Workforce Service Centers, and we're fortunate in that we have a very flexible, nimble staff, and we've allocated resources as best we can. But as you recall, I mentioned we actually have 47 Workforce Service Centers, 35 pulled back, plus two more for the recommendation, still would not provide one additional staff person per center. So, and I think I also would add that there are jobs and there is some hiring, but it's taking longer. It's taking more work, and we need our staff to be able to work with the individuals who are unemployed to write resumes, to practice interviewing, to give them the skills they need to stand out amongst the other hundreds of people applying for the very few open jobs.
Could I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please do.
How many people are actually doing that work at the Dakota County Center, the actual work with individual future employees who are looking for work?
Mr. Chair?
Go right ahead.
And if you don't mind, I actually have my director from the Dakota County for, and I'd like to ask him to help me with that answer.
Come on down. This would be a lifeline?
I was to say that, but Brenda already used it. So.
Let's go 50-50.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm Mark Jacobs, the director for the Dakota and Scott County Workforce Investment Board. Representative, to answer your question, in West St. Paul, we have two people in the resource room who work with the folks who are coming in for that universal service. We have additional counselors who work one-on-one with people who are eligible for the dislocated worker program, which you talked about previously.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jacobs, and I appreciate that we... the 35 people that are being sent out to do the work of interacting with businesses aren't those two people that are in the resource room, but your resource room folks are also having day-to-day contact with businesses about what they need, the kinds of employees they need, the skill sets they're looking for. The relationship's being built on that level too, is that right?
That's correct, although quite frankly that's less of their job. The resource room folks are really focused on the job seekers. The greater interaction with employers is primarily those business services
and
that are deemed employees, just to clarify.
Okay, and if we put the level of resources into our workforce development centers that would allow those workforce center workers to go out and build the relationships with local employers, I should step back. The other point is we're trying to put a Dakota County worker in a Dakota County job most often, I believe, and please correct me if I'm wrong there. And so building the relationships on that kind of regional as opposed to a statewide level is going to be something that's more helpful to those workers. Is that true?
Just a couple points, and hopefully I answer your question here. Quite frankly, wherever we can get someone a job, and we're not focused that a Dakota County person's in Dakota County or vice versa, and a job that's best for them is the goal. Geography withstanding. As far as the business service specialist, the way DEED has it set up is, for example, in Dakota Scott, we have two business service specialists. As it turns out, they're housed in Burnsville, in our workforce center there, and their primary responsibilities in that geographic area, and that's how DEED has structured that. Throughout the state, is there are areas where these business service specialists serve. To your point, so they have that better understanding with the local employers. And the way it also works is they're working, and or should be working anyway, with the local city community and economic development directors. So that tie is made because as in rural areas, it looks a little different than the metro, of course, as far as number of businesses and what's reasonable for anyone to have contact with. So, for example, in a rural county where there may only be a couple hundred employers, you can know all of them. In Dakota County, where there's 12,000, you're not going to. So there's some variances based on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have another question, but before we get to that, I have a question. In the governor's recommendations, and I don't know if you saw them, there's $6 million coming out of the Workforce Development Fund. And why don't you tell me, are Workforce Development Funds meant for job training?
Kathy suggests I take that one. Representative Mahoney, I'm not the most skilled at knowing the full technical pieces of the law on that, quite frankly. Is that generally how the money's used? Yeah. But if there's variabilities, I don't know that.
Thank you. Representative Hawes.
Thank you very much. I was actually in a different life. I was a past chair of Stearns Benton Workforce Council. So I do have at least some baptism into these programs.
You're a
baptist. I've been thrown out of some very good churches. Thank you. During times of need or when people are searching for efficiencies, we often look at the number of consuls in 16 or workforce centers and say, why don't we just divide this in half and then we can save all this administrative cost. Has that ever been looked at or has it ever been stopped being looked at? And what is your reaction to that comment?
Yes, go right ahead. Representative, I'm sure been looked at and been looked at by different individuals. But my real reaction and part of what I was trying to impart as important is that each of those different areas really have different needs, different demands, different economies, and that the way we're most effective is by being able to be locally driven. And that isn't intended to protect jobs. That isn't intended to protect my opportunity to chair the Dakota Scott Workforce Investment Board. It truly is that there is variation in what we need, and being able to manage the funds and the programs and strategies locally allow us to best able meet the needs of our job seekers and our employers. And as evidenced both by the work of the Greater Metropolitan Workforce Council, the work of our Tri-Wib example, work of other WIBs that are going across state lines, we do come together when it's appropriate to best serve our constituents. In where would you draw the boundary to be most effective if you were to split it in half or quarter? That's my opinion. Thank you.
Follow-up question.
Please.
Could you cite an example of how an area might differ from the area next to it, so that you would say that the heterogeneous mix here wouldn't be working as well as having two sites? Can you give us a specific example of why you think that you may have just the right number and we shouldn't reduce it by half?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'll do my best, and I would also like to invite Mark to weigh in on this. You know, as I started out with, this is just my part-time job, and so I'm not as deeply embedded. But, I mean, if we look at the needs of employees that might be up on the range as opposed to the needs in Minneapolis or St. Paul, they're very different, the types of employment, the type of transportation challenges, the types of businesses that exist. So for me, it is even just looking at the businesses or the economies or the income levels, the diversity. Various areas are experiencing quite different types of cultural diversities, and we need to be responsive to the pockets that are growing. So that would be my response, but Mark might choose to add to that.
Thank you, Kathy. Yeah, just to elaborate, Representative Paul, I've had this position for seven years, and I know that it's been studied at least twice in those 7 years, if not three times. And you probably were able to go through some of that.
Mr. Chair, it's about at that pace, you know, for every 7 years. So,
And the Governor's Workforce Council did one of the studies, and I know it was probably a couple years ago where Deed was very interested in that very concept and explored it and held meetings throughout the state. And really what they found in their listening sessions was a great comfort that things were going okay, in other words, the benefits to the way the system's structured. Now, having said that, are we continuously looking at how we can do things better? And will these times continue to spur those conversations? Absolutely. Our example of Scott County was previously a partner with Hennepin and Carver. For various reasons, back in, I believe it's 2005, they said, you know, asked if we'd be interested from the Dakota County standpoint of partnering because of the demographic similarities of not only the businesses, but the residents. It made good sense, and it was one of those wonderful win-wins. Hennepin was happy, Scott was happy, and so was Dakota, and thus a realignment. Your area is probably a good example, too, where the Stearns-Benton and the St. Cloud area is significantly different than the surrounding areas. And so that's kind of the background.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Testifier.
Representative Winkler, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry if I need a little remedial education here on what this is, but basically the mission is to find people jobs, correct?
Correct.
I mean, okay.
Yeah.
And I guess the follow-up question is, we hire people, the business that I work at, we hire people all the time, and I can't think of a way in which we would have interacted in any way with one of these centers or would have been asked to or anything else. You know, when we need somebody, we either advertise on monster.com or we call a firm that will place somebody in the company and we pay them extra for basically a probationary time, and if we want to hire them, we keep them. How do you interact with employers? How do you place people? How do you identify? I mean, a lot of companies aren't out there searching and can't find. A lot of companies just need people, and it's relatively easy to attract them without working with you. So how do you interact with employers who are hiring?
Ms.
I'll start at a high level, and as an employer myself who also hires, and those are challenges, and then I'll let Mark address the real technical issues of it. I think, first of all, because workforce investment boards, workforce councils are largely made up of employers, we already have an inroad to interact. But we do things. We hold employer of the day. We do, as board members, interact with employers and offer the services of the workforce centers. And probably one of the best advantages, whether jobs are posted on Minnesota Works or another avenue, is we don't, other than through our employer taxes, we don't pay to find employees that are referred from the Workforce Center. I know Monster.com is expensive, and the Pioneer Press and the Tribune are expensive, and certainly recruiters are expensive, paying at least 20% of a fee, and then you hope they last through the year and whatnot. So this is a service that is local and is no cost other than any taxes I pay to me as an employer. Mark, would you add to that?
Just a little bit. Thank you, Kathy. Representative, is Minnesota Works, as Kathy mentioned, is a statewide site that's free for employers. And the reality that we see in the working with employers, and I do some of that, is some are larger employers in our area, Blue Cross, Northwest, for example, plenty of resources to go get people. But we have smaller employers whose budgets aren't quite as sturdy to do that, and this is an option. Never pretend that we're the silver bullet to answer all employee needs, especially, well, more so now than before, but in times of shortages. A couple other things that we do is we're actively involved with the Chambers of Commerce in our area as far as publicizing what we have available. We have incumbent worker training grants that are available that to train workers for existing companies. Our area is targeted companies with 100 or fewer employees. But we have plenty of outreach also, not only with the business service specialist, but we have a staff person who works with the public assistance end of the spectrum, and working with employers on job matches there.
Mr. Chair, are there incentives built into the system to, an employee gets a bonus or a commission or something else if they're successfully able to place somebody for at least a year or something like that in the system that you have? Because I know that's in the recruiting world or in the placement world, that's basically what happens. It's a sales job.
Certainly, Representative, in our system, no. And I'm speaking when I say ours, Dakota Scott. Now, there could be, in our 16 workforce service areas, some are organizationally set up as nonprofits. They may have that leeway to have incentive-based bonuses. We don't.
And I guess, Mr. Chair, the final point is just an observation. I had never heard of Minnesota Work. We have a small company of 25 employees. We hire with some regularity. We work in the IT sector. It tends to be more professional, higher-end jobs, but still a great deal of turnover. We, however, get contacted by recruiters all the time who want to come in and try to place and meet our needs as a company that's hiring. So we don't spend... we try to limit the amount of time that we spend on going out and recruiting people for jobs. We'd rather have somebody come in with a list of 20 resumes that we can review and say, yeah, we'd like to interview these two, and away we go, and we don't have to take time away from our other operations. So I guess it seems to me that there is more that could be done to be an effective placement agency, essentially. And I don't know what the answer is, but I just know that from the employer's point of view, if you don't happen to be connected up somehow with your service, it seems to be sort of hard to know about it.
Representative Hodge.
Thank you. To that point, I think, Representative Winkler, where we're headed now is people on a higher echelon being unemployed, where this process started before the churn was at a little lower and the skill types were a little bit on a lower level.
And so you didn't have the people maybe that are looking for an opportunity to lose their job and be highly educated or highly skilled and looking for work. These companies and these businesses, when Finger Hut went down, the need for the workforce centers and workforce councils really showed their integrity at that time. So I think it might be at a different echelon of service than what you may be thinking of, but that service is also needed and has been needed and is still needed very much so.
I suspect as severance packages run out, there'll be more of the upper echelon with that opportunity to be unemployed showing up at workforce centers. But did you have a question or a comment?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just say that when we hire software developers, they're usually people who make probably $60,000 a year and don't have a college education. So it's not like we're talking about hiring CEOs, placing $500,000 or $100,000 employees necessarily when we're talking about this. And actually, I just read in the newspaper that the biggest unemployment hit is white-collar Twin Cities professionals, and in fact, that's where the biggest hit to this economy has been. So I think it's sort of right on point.
Mr. Chair, I, Representative, I agree with you, but that's a new target. I mean, that's a new phenomenon that's happening this year and wasn't happening 5 or 10 years ago. So what we have here is probably going to be a regearing to that population of which your person may have not had an opportunity to work with. When Finger Hut went down, I realized that about 80% of the people working from the outside of the St. Cloud area were working in order to have health insurance for their family. And they didn't really care too much about the salary, but needed to have health insurance to supplement their farm work or what other work they were doing. So I don't disagree with you. I just think it's a new phenomenon.
Representative Gottwald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe to build on what Representative Hawes and Winkler were talking about, too, I think the concern, and I share it to a certain extent, is that you have limited exposure. And there may be some things, I don't know who would answer this question, but what is Minnesota Works doing to try to connect with more employers? If I asked what percentage of Minnesota employers are you currently interfacing with, obviously it's not Mr. Winkler's firm, but, you know, would it be 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%? And what are we doing to try to, if the term is retool, as Representative Hawes said, what are we doing right now to try to retool so that that becomes a real meaningful connection?
Representative, I can personally answer that question. The straight answer and the direct info you need really needs to come from PE, because Minnesota Works is something they developed and is really a new software they put into place. I do know that a part of their marketing efforts included on CCO radio in the morning. And my understanding is that was tremendously effective, but I cannot answer percentages for you. We do publicize it within our area. Once again, do not know to the intent that it goes in. I just would like to follow up on one piece from the representative over here, is that one of the things for our job seekers that we do encourage is to look at the full avenue of opportunities to get a job. So networking is always the most effective. But it's also looking at the newspapers, looking at the job boards, looking at specific company sites. It's also working with the headhunters and the temp firms. So I hope, but certainly don't know, that some of the people you may have hired have come through our doors, but through the avenue, it should be invisible to you. I do know that looking at some of our placement stats, we're getting people placed in the IT world at, as you point out, really very good salaries.
Well, I'm gonna take the prerogative of the chair here to kind of throw this out, because there's a couple other, there's no one else, so I get to have the last word here. One of my concerns is, as we retool, we're going to have to look at people from St. Cloud working in Minneapolis working up in St. Cloud, and St. Paul, Minneapolis working down in Rochester, out in Wilmer working here, Mankato working in the Twin Cities.
Mexico, Somalia.
Yeah, too. And one of my concerns, and I think I was pretty clear here, is that the workforce service areas need to be very cognizant of working across those area lines. You're correct. They looked at that every couple of years. And I don't understand why every couple of years they come up to this wall and go, oh my God, no. So I will just, hopefully members will kind of take that subtle hint that going down the road of trying to combine workforce centers is dangerous.
Well-beaten path.
Well-beaten path and it's dangerous. But those service areas need to really show us, the funders, and the federal government as funders, how they're working across those areas and trying to work across the whole northern tier, the core cities, and our, what did somebody call them, regional centers in the more urban rural areas, because that's going to be important. You know, I don't think we're going to have, as much as we want to work close to home, we're trying to build a statewide economy, the statewide plan, and I'll just leave it at that. And if you've got any closing comments, we got about a minute.
Closing comments, Mr. Chair, and I agree with you, and I will agree we take that up as a challenge, and Ann Olson is certainly in a great position to help us give you the information you need about how we are working across those lines and making things happen. But there are examples. We talked about the TriWib, and we've talked about the Metro Council. We've seen examples in the airline industry, projects we have with Northwest Airlines. But what we need to do is show you what we've done so that you really see it and demonstrate it. And so Ann certainly will do that for us on behalf of the beauty of a statewide association is we can get that information.
Well, I will comment, Ann has been absolutely fabulous bringing information and helping us figure that out. Mm-hmm. And I just am hoping to expand on what you've already done, because you've actually done some nice work with that.
Thank you.
Members, I'm going to close today with a we seem to have a new thing every day. We had the deal tonight, 2025. Tomorrow, Science and Technology Day on the Hill, from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock at the Capitol Great Hall. So it's a showcase of rural and metro-based companies that will display their science and technology-based products. And it's I will go call it TBED, for Technology-Based Economic Development and the approaches that we're using in the state. So if you get a chance to wander down there, there's a lot of companies from across the state. Unless there's anything else, we stand adjourned. Thank you, members.